This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And right now, we got to go out to the Goodyear Hotline and bring on our guy, Chris the Bear Felica, who is the host of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. And Chris, we got to start with college football. And of course, if that's where we're going, it's got to be with the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, the number one Georgia Bulldogs, 14-point favorites against the Florida Gators tomorrow. Where are the Sharps putting their money on in this matchup?
Well, I'm looking at going over the total, which I think is a little contrarian, being that you're dealing with the best defense in the country in Georgia. But I think the Georgia defense is going to be able to get a couple of turnovers in this game, turn those into short fields. Maybe Emory Jones or Anthony Richardson turns throws a pick six. I think that's going to really generate some not offensive points. And I'm not sure Florida's going to be able to stand up in the line of scrimmage. We saw LSU, a team that hadn't been able to run the ball all year long, just run up and down the field on them a couple of weeks ago in Baton Rouge. Now they got to go against a better offensive line and a better set of backs and a quarterback who is much more efficient. So I don't like the matchup for Florida's defense, but at the same time, I think if this game gets out of hand, you might be able to see Florida get a couple of deep passes and get a couple of points on the board. And this could be like a 38-17 type of game, which would put the game over.
Oh, you're killing me about my Florida Gators, Chris.
Sorry.
All right, let's move on to Iowa State, West Virginia. Iowa State, a 7.5-point favorite against WVU. How do you see this one going?
It's interesting because Iowa State is essentially favored by the same amount this week at West Virginia as they were over the number 8 team in the country last week. And Oklahoma State has a much better defense than West Virginia. Oklahoma State has a much better running game than West Virginia. And if you look at the way Iowa State has handled West Virginia the last 3 years, they've beaten them by double digits, I think it's every time. And they haven't been more than a 9-point favorite in any game. I don't know if you saw last week, Brock Purdy alluded to the game with Oklahoma State is just a bad matchup for Iowa State. Like whatever Oklahoma State did defensively just really would fit in well with trying to slow down Iowa State. Whatever West Virginia does, it's a good matchup for Iowa State this week because the Clones have had very little trouble with the Mountaineers the last few weeks. And I think that West Virginia win last week is a little devalued because I think that was a TCU team with a bunch of injured players. We had them on ABC Prava the week before in Oklahoma, and there was a walking wounded. So I think maybe downgrade that West Virginia win over TCU last week, and I'm going to lay the points with Iowa State in Morgantown.
Talking with Chris the Bear Felica, co-host of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. And, Chris, we got to go to Boise State. They're 2.5-point favorites against Colorado State. How do you see this matchup playing out?
I think this is a little bit of a reputation line for Boise. This is not the same Boise State team that we remember with Kellen Moore and Zabransky and Ian Johnson and all those great teams that were looking to crack the BCS about 10 years ago or so. This is a team that's 3-4. This is a team that hasn't been able to stop the run all year long. And I think Colorado State was a little bit of a punchline this week, which how badly they mismanaged the end of that game last week. But this is still the same team that went to Iowa and played the Hawkeyes very tough. They went on the road and beat Toledo. That's a team that's going to be dedicated and committed to running the ball. I think they're going to have some success, and as a short old dog, I like them to beat Boise.
Nebraska is a 7.5-point favorite against Purdue, a 3-5 against a 4-3. How do you see this one going?
This line really didn't make much sense to me. It was a lot higher than I thought it would be, north of 7 points. I think it makes it an attractive play for the majority of people to take Purdue, being that Nebraska's just been all over the place this year. But I think the Purdue win at Iowa a couple of weeks ago, I think that was more about bad Iowa than it was really great Purdue. I know David Bell had a great game, but Iowa couldn't stop turning the ball over. Didn't have any success offensively. But now, with what Nebraska did a couple of weeks ago in Minneapolis, they've had a week off since then. It's a team that has been on the short end of quite a few close games this year. I think we're going to see an effort from Nebraska this week, much closer to what we saw from them at the start of the year against Northwestern when they had a tough loss the week before, came back the following week and absolutely blew out Northwestern. I think Nebraska's going to get right tomorrow, and I'm going to lay the points with Huskers.
Chris, we got a big weekend in the Big Ten. We got two matchups featuring teams in the top 10. And, of course, we got to focus on the in-state rivalry in Michigan. Number 6, Michigan taking on little brother, number 8, Michigan State. Michigan 4-point favorites in what is the biggest game of the weekend. How do you see this one playing out? Who gets the win?
Spoken like Mike Hart there, referring with the little brother. I like. I'll be honest with you. I've been baffled by Michigan State all year. They have been defying the odds makers and winning a couple of 50-50 games that they very easily could have lost. They and Michigan have a very similar kind of resume. Both have wins in the non-conference over Power 5 teams. It sounds a lot better than they really are. Michigan State going to Miami and winning. Michigan blowing out Washington and Ann Arbor. Both teams probably should have lost to Nebraska. So I'm not sure we really know how good either team is. But I think Michigan, if they're forced to pass tomorrow, that could be problematic because their success rate in throwing the ball isn't very great. Michigan State feels a little public underdogish, but at the same time, they've been heavy public plays all year long, and they're winning. While I think Michigan is better, I have a hard time going against Spartans right now. So I would lean towards taking Michigan State plus that 4.5.
Wow. Okay. There it is. I mean, that should be a fun matchup. Chris, we appreciate you jumping on with us and giving us a few moments and trying to get our listeners their money up. We appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
We'll try. Amber, Chris, have a great weekend.
All right. That's Chris the Bear Felica, co-host of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. College football is heating up. Tune in tomorrow as Wisconsin hosts Iowa, presented by Dr. Pepper. Coverage begins at 11 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up next, from college to the NFL, what is the outlook of the Cardinals after the loss to the Green Bay Packers last night? We'll tell you after this word from 5-Hour Energy. What's your ultimate game day experience? A tricked-out man cave? Maybe deluxe tailgating? No matter your dream, enter the 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes for a chance to win $10,000 and make your ultimate game day experience a reality. To enter, buy any 5-Hour Energy product, then upload the receipt. It's that easy. The 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes, enter today, no purchase necessary, must be 18 and a legal resident of the U.S., ends December 10th, 2021. For official rules on how to enter without purchase, visit the number 5hesport.com. Again, 5hesport.com. Void where prohibited. More from Kenny and Golic Jr. back after this.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program. Now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. And Amber, we got to get back to the Thursday night game, the thriller out in the desert with Green Bay and Arizona going back and forth. I thought for a moment Kyler Murray was going to have one of those magical MVP statement moments with that last drive, 99 yards down the field. But unfortunately, we know how that game ended with Rasul Douglas getting the interception, A.J. Green not on the same page. But I got to ask you, does that loss sour you on the Arizona Cardinals, their prospects of winning the NFC West and overall being one of the best teams in the NFC?
The short answer to that is no. But before I get into that, there are reports out there now, Chris, because we have been talking about this all show long, what happened on that last play there between Kyler Murray and A.J. Green. And now there's reports circulating out there that the call that Cliff Kingsbury had dialed up a pass to the left, but that Murray saw the better matchup there with Douglas on Green, and then he apparently signaled for a back shoulder fade to Green, but Green didn't see the audible. So he didn't know that he was about to target him. Does that change your mind at all? Because we've been really down on AJ Green and not really understanding how this miscommunication could happen, or how he wouldn't know that he'd be the target when he's matched up against a dude who was just on the practice squad 22 days earlier on the opposing team. So how did AJ Green not know? Does it change your mind at all if that was a Kyler Murray audible that Green just didn't see?
Well, you certainly want to be on the same page as everybody that's out there on the field. And coming out of a timeout, you would think that everybody would kind of have a heads up on what we're going to potentially face, the different looks that the Packers could give us. Having an answer for zero blitz in that circumstance, you would think that A.J. Green, a veteran wide receiver, would be able to find a way to be on the same page as his quarterback. But that information doesn't change my opinion about A.J. Green at all. And here's why. Like, you're a receiver. You know it's a pass play. Like it's just one of those situations where you have to be aware that the ball could potentially be coming to you, especially in a 3-by-1 formation where you got three receivers on the other side and you one-on-one coverage against a guy that was on the practice squad for Arizona a few earlier in the season. Like, that's a situation where A.J. Green has got to know the ball could be coming to me because Kyler could like the matchup and not having to deal with some of the other traffic on the other side of the formation. So I can't excuse A.J. Green and that mental lapse that he had, because ultimately it cost the Arizona Cardinals a chance to win a game and maintain their perfect record.
I tried, A.J. I tried.
You tried. You tried.
I tried. I tried. Everyone's very down on A.J. Green today, and frankly, rightfully so. But to answer your earlier question, it doesn't temper what I now expect from the Cardinals or the noise they could make in their division and certainly in their conference, because we are still looking at a team that's 7-1 and atop the NFC, now tied, of course, with the Packers. Last year, Kingsbury's offense, I think you could argue that it was a little bit one-dimensional, where this season you're seeing with the Cardinals that they are getting contributions typically from guys like A.J. Green, even if he had an off moment there, and Rondell Moore and Christian Kirk, and now, of course, Ertz as well. It feels like a team that's much more complete than the Cardinals team that we saw last season. I also don't think that last night's game changes the conversation, though, on the flip side, Chris, because I don't think any of us really, really believed in them being undefeated. Like, I think we all expected that they were going to cough it up here at some point. And of course, they do that against a shorthanded Green Bay Packers team, but nevertheless, a very good Green Bay Packers team with the reigning MVP at the helm. I don't know if there's a ton of shame in that. I'm not one who's all in on the Cardinals. I'm not suggesting that I'm all in on the Cardinals. All I'm saying is that I don't think the conversation about where they could go, especially when we talk about, you know, postseason aspirations, as we're not even halfway through the season yet here in week 8, I don't think the conversation changes based on Thursday night football.
No, I don't think it changes either. I still look at the Arizona Cardinals as a contender, but they're certainly not one of the favorites in the conference. I look to the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to wear that hat. But let's hear a little bit more from the hero from last night's game, cornerback Rasul Douglas from the Green Bay Packers. These are his comments after picking off that pass from Kyler Murray.
That was probably the first time I, like, won a game like that. So it was like a shocking feeling, like, oh, snap. Like, we just won off that play, you know? I was, like, kind of in surprise. And I just see Stokes and them running down, like, you just said you was going to get a pick. And I was like, word. And it just came to life.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those situations that he didn't anticipate. But you heard what Aaron Rodgers had said about him, you know, 3 games in, being able to mesh with the team and fit the scheme that Joe Barry is asking him to execute. And he comes up with the game-winning play at the most opportune time, being able to snatch that win for the Green Bay Packers and hand the Arizona Cardinals their first loss, and really bailing the Green Bay Packers offense out under those circumstances, and bailing some of his guys on defense out too, because they did allow the Cardinals to drive the length of the field. So that was a huge play by Rasul Douglas. It feels like in that Arizona stadium, a lot of games seem to have that kind of ending with an interception that's in the end zone. But tip your cap off to him. This is a guy that was on practice squad earlier in the year, and now he's making a game-winning play for a team that's contending in the NFC.
Yeah, on the Cardinals practice squad, nonetheless. I think that all this talk around AJ Green, and that is the talk today, and goodness knows we've been doing on this show as well, it's kind of taken away from Rasul's moment. Like, I feel a little bad from him because it was a good pick, even if AJ Green should have turned around. And it was obviously the most pivotal moment in Rasul Douglas's career. We are talking about a guy who was cut by the Raiders and the Texans this year, a dude who's been in the league for 5 years. You don't normally see five-year vet on practice squads, and he was on a practice squad less than a month ago for the Arizona Cardinals, and then he ends up getting that game-winning moment for the Green Bay Packers. So a long, strange trip that it has been for Rasul Douglas, and I think that all this talk about AJ Green and what seemed like a mental faux pas in that moment, even if it was an audible, which is weird because the head coach has said that that was the route, and I don't know who to believe, and I don't know if AJ Green is planting stuff in the media with all these other things that are circulating. Whoever's fault it was on that play, whoever we assign blame to, it's kind of taking away from what Rasul Douglas did in that moment, and that dude deserves props because that was a great moment and a great win for the Packers and a great story that a guy essentially off the streets, as you heard his quarterback say, can come in and contribute like he did down the stretch.
Well, Amber, if no other shows are going to give Rasul Douglas his flowers, Kenny and Golic Jr. will do it today. Rasul Douglas won that game for the Green Bay Packers. Coming up next, is it even necessary for the Cowboys to play Dak Prescott? We'll ask my former teammate Marcus Spears that and more after this word from Indeed. When you have your own business, you basically have to do everything. That includes hiring, which can become a second job. That's why there's Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. Spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Swagoo up next on Kenny and Golic Jr. back after this.
This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline, and we got to go out there right now to my man, my former teammate, and now ESPN NFL analyst, Marcus Spears. Swagoo, what up, though?
What up, C2? What's happening, man? How you doing, Amber?
I'm glad y'all included me. I felt left out for a minute there. I'm Marcus Spears' teammate now, I guess, right?
Yeah, we got to throw you in there, too.
Squad.
Absolutely, absolutely. Big fella, we got to start with Thursday Night Football, man, and I'm not one to subscribe to one player costing his team a chance to win the game in most instances, but last night what A.J. Green did, I don't know how you explain it. I can't figure it out. I was hoping that you could shed some light on this one because it doesn't make any sense to me when I hear all the explanations coming out. A.J. Green absolutely cost his team a chance to win the game last night. Am I tripping?
Well, you ain't tripping, C2, because if you're asking me, I don't have an answer for it either. I will say this, though, goal line, and if DeAndre Hopkins on the field, he my first option, right? And look, I get it. It was the right play call. I know Kyler is trying to be nice and say it was a miscommunication, but A.J. Green just blew it. I go a little bit deeper. It's not on Cliff Kingsbury. I'm not putting an indictment on the coaching or the play call, but I'm going to line up DeAndre Hopkins on the single side to see if they're going to double and maybe use him as a decoy in that way, as opposed to lining him up opposite in a three-man bunch and just having him run I don't know what route, okay? So, listen, the rapport between Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins has always been strong since these guys been playing together. I just did not like the player of that had the option on the play. The play was fine.
Man, we're taking it away from Rasul Douglas with this constant what happened with AJ Green talk. All right, Marcus, so let's talk about the Packers side of things. Obviously, they do get the dub. They were super shorthanded in this one. Aaron Rodgers didn't have his three favorite targets. So are the Packers the best team in the NFC?
No, I don't have the Packers as the best team in the NFC, but obviously they made a statement last night. I had Tampa ahead of Arizona anyway. All records ain't the same. I remember a time when the Denver Broncos was undefeated. So listen, this is the NFC is a phenomenal conference this year. It's going to be tight down the stretch. You got the Rams, the Cowboys, obviously Tampa, Arizona, Green Bay. Minnesota could be a dark horse team because of the firepower they have offensively. But no, I don't have Green Bay as the best team. They got the best quarterback, though, when you talk about everybody outside of Tom Brady. I just looked at that team last night, and I think the thing that was so impressive, Amber, is Arizona knew they were going to run it and they couldn't stop it. And if that element is going to be available to Aaron Rodgers with the way Aaron Jones ran the football, the way A.J. Dillon ran the football, if that part is going to be available to the Green Bay Packers all season long, and you got a defense that made stops after stops and got turnovers, then this team is absolutely poised to fight for a spot in the NFC Championship. No Devontae, no Lazard. You line down, the team knows you're going to run it, and they can't stop it. And Arizona is not stout. They hadn't been stout against the run. They missed J.J. Watt tremendously last night. But that's a great win for Green Bay to let them know that they can win another way if need be.
Mark, you just described the worst feeling in football when the other team is running the ball and you know they're running it and you can't stop it. The worst feeling in football. You and I have been in a couple of those games. The one in Washington, our rookie season, is the one that sticks out in my mind the most. But we ain't got to talk about that too much more. But I do have to ask you about what's going on in Cleveland. The Browns announced that Baker Mayfield is medically cleared and he's going to get the start against the Steelers. I want to know how much this injury with Baker complicates the situation with him contractually moving forward and whether or not the Browns are going to be able to figure out if they've got their guy for the next decade plus.
See, too, I think they know. I think they are going to extend Baker. It's about value at this point. It's about what do you have to sacrifice if you sign him? Can you do a team-friendly deal? Listen, man, you know, everybody think I'd be hating on Baker, man. Baker is fine. Baker is not a guy that is, I believe, for a 17-game season, is going to be the reason you win football games most of the time, right? He's on a great team with a lot of talent as far as guys around him, supported by a tremendous run game, really good offensive line. And I just wonder if Cleveland is looking at that and saying, what if we can't have this same type of infrastructure in place for whatever 5-6 year deal that he signs going down the road? There's a value thing that needs to be worked out, because all of the talk about Case Keenum and Baker Mayfield, they know Baker Mayfield is better than Case Keenum. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But what Case Keenum playing and winning that game did was show that Cleveland is not really built on their QB's performance week in and week out. So that makes it a little bit convoluted on your value when you move forward. So I think that and then, too, this particular game with the shoulder, man, listen, the medically clear, Baker wants to play. He understands the gravity of where he is right now as far as trying to attain extension. But the bottom line is, man, T.J. Watt hit the quarterback a lot, bro. And Cam Hayward hit the quarterback a lot. Alex Highsmith opposite hits the quarterback a lot. And if you don't think for one second that the Pittsburgh Steelers are not going to go in there with a focus on getting that run stop so they can get after Baker Mayfield, you are outside of your mind. I'm just not a big fan of this being a particular week that you want to try to test to see if your shoulder feel well. This offensive line needs to have one of the best performances they've had, and Jedrick Wills, the tackle for the Cleveland Browns, needs to have probably his best game to keep T.J. Watt under wraps. If not, we may see Baker sidelined again.
Speaking of quarterback injuries, Cowboys-Vikings, we get that Sunday night. This might be the highest scoring game of the weekend, Marcus, if Cooper Rush is not under center for the Cowboys. Sorry, Coop. So let's talk about the health of Dak for a second. He's still a hard maybe to go Sunday night. Should the Cowboys play Dak Prescott?
I mean, listen, it's so hard because we talked about this with the shoulder and would he play? What was the concern level of gravity? These muscle strains are so tricky because you know you're going to put pressure on them. And you got what Britt Brown, who is one of the head trainers, and then Jim Maurer, Chris is very familiar with them. What they have to determine is what's the risk of injury for real? Because if you pop a calf, it's 8 weeks minimum. I did it before. And now you lost the war trying to win one battle. that may not end up being all of that important as you move forward through this season. If I was the Dallas Cowboys, what I would do is I would have Dak tested again tomorrow. I would have him tested before the game, and we make an informed decision. But going into the game, I'm going to lean on 164 yards per game run game and allow this offensive line and Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard to take pressure. And when I want to push the ball down the field, I want to use Schultz and Blake Jarwin, quick game, kind of similar to what we saw the Green Bay Packers do, honestly. And if you can move in that way. But if we're talking about a game where we're going to be dropping back and Dak going to have to be moving off the spot and doing all of that, it's even more to think about. Minnesota is 30th in the league against the run. So I think you should probably have a heavy dose of the run again. And Dallas has the second-ranked rushing attack in the NFL. You probably should go into this game thinking that I'm going to lean heavily on my O-line and my run game, no matter who the quarterback is.
Mark, we appreciate you jumping on with us, giving us a few minutes of your time. I know you got a busy schedule with interviewing the future coaches for the LSU Tigers, so we're going to let you get back to doing that, bro. But enjoy week 8 in the NFL, and we'll talk to you soon, my man.
3-2 and Amber, I appreciate y'all having me, man. Y'all take care.
That is ESPN NFL analyst Marcus Spears, the big swagoo. Kenny and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, the new NBA rule changes have affected some high-profile players, including Trae Young, who is not all that happy about it. We'll explain next. This is Kenny and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. And Amber, we got to get to a little bit of hoops. I know we got a football Friday, but something that Trae Young said sparked a lot of conversation that's been going on around a recent NBA rules change. This is Trae Young responding to the rule change on the fender bender fouls that the NBA has implemented this season. And he says, I don't want to get fined too much, but it's frustrating. There's a lot of missed calls. It's basketball. It feels that they're leaning and they're just not, well, I don't know. It's frustrating. You can watch basketball. Damian Lillard's never averaged 17 points probably since his rookie year. There's a couple of guys, Books averaging 18 points. There's a lot of things that when guys are driving straight and guys are getting knocked off balance, it's still a foul, whether they're using their lower body or their hands. Now, to me, this sounds like there's somebody that's salty that they can't take advantage of a glitch in the matrix, but that's just me. What are your thoughts when you hear Trae Young talk about the rules change in the NBA?
I mean, it's not a foul. Like, that's what they're telling you, Trae. It's not a foul. They're not calling it. It is not a foul. They're trying to take these non-basketball moves designed to draw contact out of the game because it's boring as hell for us all to watch, right? I mean, Chris, that's the root of this. It's a product. They're selling us a product. Watching James Harden shoot a million free throws is not a good product. And the NBA figured that out. And in doing so, has decided that it has to do something to make the product better for the fans. Now, that's obviously going to affect some of these guys in the league, that is a component of their game. And I don't have any issue with the James Hardens of the world exploiting that lack of rule, because I do think, hey, shoot your shot when you can shoot it and take advantage of the rules in the ways that you can take advantage of them. And he's done that for years. And Trae Young has done that here early in his career. And Dame has done that. And a lot of these guys were smart enough to do that because their NBA IQ levels are so high that they will find any way to exploit the game in the ways that they are allowed to do so. And the NBA was allowing this to happen, where that exploitation leads to a very boring product in a lot of regards for the consumer. And so they have now fixed that issue, and they fixed it with all of us in mind, but not so much with Trae Young in mind. I do understand, though, Chris, how an athlete, even though, like, I like it, is my point from a fan perspective. It's making it better for all of us.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, because it's an entertainment product at the end of it, and the flow of the game is so much better when the referees swallow the whistles and you get to see the up-and-down play with some of the best basketball players in the world. So, like, I'm a fan of the rules change. Like, I'm not here for the guys doing non-basketball movements in order to draw fouls and stoppages in play. Like, I'm not about that. I want to see the guys get up and down the court. I want to see the pace of play because I think that's the most exciting brand of basketball in the NBA.
That's what we all want to see. So they're doing it for us, but they're not doing it for the Trae Youngs of the world. And for them, I understand the frustration. And I'm glad that Trae Young said, I don't want to get fined too much because you're about to get fined. I mean, we all know what's about to happen. He was very forthcoming with the media about his disdain here for these new rules and how this lack of calls is being enforced. We may like it. I do understand why he doesn't, though, because we are talking about professional athletes, right? In sports evolve, but athletes spend their entire lives fine-tuning themselves where they have the precision and they are used to playing a certain way, even if they're doing it because of a lack of rule in place and they find some competitive advantage in that way, and then all of a sudden the rules change overnight and they have to adjust. And I can understand the frustration coming from the guys who that affects the most. So I am curious though, Chris, obviously former NFLer, like, was there a point in your NFL career, or even before that in college, but really in your pro career, where the rules changed on you and you had to change as a consequence?
Yeah, absolutely there was. And it was 2009 after Tom Brady had that season-ending knee injury in week one of 2008. The NFL decided they wanted to implement a quarterback strike zone to try to protect the quarterbacks. You couldn't hit them in the neck or above, and you couldn't hit them in the knee or below, because you wanted to make sure you maintain the health and safety of the marquee players on each team, and that would be those quarterbacks. So as a defensive lineman whose job it is to sack the quarterback, not only do I have to worry about beating the offensive lineman, I got to worry about how I'm going to tackle the quarterback when I actually get there. So that made life a lot harder in terms of being able to affect the passer, being able to affect the opposing team's offense when you don't have that intimidation factor of being able to knock out the opposing quarterback. And then to take it a step further, a few years after that, we had the defenseless receiver rule, which made it a lot harder for linebackers and safeties to enforce the middle of the field for those knockout shots that you used to see on those NFL highlight films. Like, you don't have those anymore. So it made it a lot tougher for defenses to be able to defend these offenses. And I think that's when we've seen the evolution of the passing game in the National Football League. It made life a lot harder for us. It's still not something that I'm necessarily all on board with, but I understand from an entertainment standpoint, but also with the NFL, from a player's safety standpoint, why they changed the rules and they moved in that direction.
Well, from a quarterback safety standpoint in particular. But yeah, those rules changes, like, they had to have been endlessly frustrating for you when they happened, because you're being asked mid-career to change what you've been doing in a certain way that you've been playing. And so I do understand the frustration from a guy like Trae Young. I don't blame him for it, even if we, all of us, all the rest of us, all of us consuming the product, we are absolutely here for this rule change. So in the end, Trae Young's going to end up losing this battle. He's going to have to adjust his game, as is James Harden and the rest of them.
Well, here's the thing, Amber. I mean, you're talking about the best athletes in the world. So when we start getting to the professional ranks, that's what you're talking about. And so the expectation is that they will adjust. They will find a way to be productive. They will find a way to be effective. And that's just what's par for the course at that point. Like in the NFL, defenders eventually adjusted to how they have to tackle receivers, how they have to tackle quarterbacks. I remember my defensive line coach, he said, just worry about cutting the guy in half. Think about it that way. You'll never get in trouble. You'll never get fined. So I have no doubt that Trae Young will be able to adjust his game. James Harden and others will be able to adjust their games. And I think we'll all be the better for it in terms of the overall entertainment product. Coming up next, though, this is a massive weekend in college football, and we'll get help breaking it down with David Pollack joining us next. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.